Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Lee Cantor. How's it going, Lee?
It is going awesome, Stone. How was your weekend?
My weekend was great, and I did accomplish something that my wife has been on me for several weeks. I finally got a garage full of firewood.
Nice.
Well, and my wife, Holly, well before now, and this is why I'm in so much trouble, she'll turn the air conditioning on just so she can have a fire. Of course, she didn't have to do that this week.
I know. It's been brutal.
And then working up to the weekend, I just had a blast. Last week, of course, I was coming off of...
Your illness. How was that?
My illness and my biweekly vacation. Yeah. The last one was up in West Virginia. But I spent a lot of last week beginning to plan Innovation Week.
Oh, that's right. How's that coming along?
Just so many details. So I'm going to need some help managing the project. We've got some neat things happening. My VP and my CEO, I believe, are both coming down that week. It's the week of February 16th. And we're going to have a session that Thursday. And nobody quote me on all this because
I'm writing it all down.
Okay. We're going to have the Innovation Summit on Thursday the 19th. We're already booked to present for the Growth Answers, which is a local marketing consortium, on the Wednesday. And I believe we're looking at presenting for a couple of associations on Tuesday as well. But what I'm really jazzed about, we're going to have the Atlanta's Most Innovative Awards, and we're going to have that awards dinner somewhere in that week and the after party.
And that's really what you're excited
that's
about.
That's what I'm jazzed about. So lots going on. Lots going on. We got a neat show for you today. I have been so excited about bringing this guest to our listeners. This is a gentleman that I've known for years, and I have a particular affinity for him because back in 2002, when I self-published my book, Never Fry Bacon in the Nude and Other Lessons from the Quick and the Dead, this gentleman was one of the first that stepped up and agreed to blurb the book.
Wow.
And so I guess I owe him, right?
And then that's why he's on now, right?
Well, and it gave the book a great deal of credence. It really did because of his background and credentials, which we'll learn about more very soon. But if you were not on my mother's Christmas list in 2002, or one of the 12 people that actually bought this book, the book was all about producing better results in less time. So this is a theme that is not brand new here on the radio show, but this gentleman is one of the reasons, and we really did sell a few more than 12 copies, but he's one of the reasons that we got the exposure we did, and that's largely because of what he's been able to do in helping his clients be more innovative. This gentleman is an executive consultant with Inova, and he's a very highly regarded speaker. He has a book coming out soon on the myth of common sense. He's established a successful executive career for several industry-leading companies, including Champion International, GTE Sylvania, and Intervace Incorporated. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show Grant Todd.
Hi, Stone. How are you?
I am doing well. It is so good to hear your voice and delighted to have you on the show.
It's great to talk with you, and I'm glad you brought up your book. I, in case there is a shortage of them, I probably still have 1,000 on my shelves.
And, don't tell them that.
I'm only kidding.
Well, you know, that's...
I have distributed them. I really have. So that's very, and they've been all well received. So.
Well, you're awfully kind to do that. And, you know, that's one of the benefits of hosting your own radio show. You can just consistently provide yourself with shameless self-promotion. But today is not about me. It's all about you. And would love to just hear more about the work you're doing and what kind of things you got going. Tell us about what kind of work you're doing.
Well, since you and I had first met, as you knew, I was already beginning my affiliation with Dr. Edward de Bono, his work around creativity, alternative thinking, et cetera, which I felt were really keynotes or foundational, I think, to efforts that organizations would try to go about making change. And they really had to begin to understand some of the building blocks of that, and Edward, in my view, had put together in such a easy, explainable way. And of course, you had to kind of really kind of grasp how the mind works and how it works with you and how it works against you. But we have developed over the years a really good relationship, and I'm working on a couple of special projects with him. And of course, after I kind of took my early outs with the corporate sector, I have been gone back and work with a number of clients to really help them set up what we might want to call as innovation on demand. And that really means that it's got to be, as you, using one of your terms, be quick or the dead, that you've got to be able to target and establish what you're going to, in our world, we call it think about. And then, of course, we have to go on and start to create as many alternative aspects of an opportunity or possibility as possible. And then finally, we have to deal with what is very hard for a lot of folks, even with long-standing relationships in companies, is a really good way to collaborate and to somehow fit the number of egos into the room that has to happen sometimes. So we pretty much what we work at, and we may take it at a different angle depending on where the client is, but that's what we have we've worked on. So
can you share a little
very
bit
successful.
Can you share a little bit about how the mind works with you and how it works against you? Can you give you examples of each?
Sure. Well, basically the mind, and of course some people like to interchange it with the brain, but we can say the brain or the mind. I think the mind is more related to ego and experience, and the brain is more set in its electrical microprocessor, basically, of taking all that billions of data in to from your experiences and from your encounters. And it is the initial machine that goes on when you are drawing, you know, your first reaction in the world is a perception. And the brain pretty much draws from patterns, and in fact, that's really its main function, is to file away a whole series of experiences and electrical information and put it in very comfortable patterns. Now, the reality is that you don't know sometimes what those patterns are because the brain has done it, and unconsciously you aren't exactly sure how it's going to come back out. So that's where oftentimes we get a misperception, or if you will, a misfire, in the terms of what we're really seeing, hearing, doing, tasting isn't exactly what we what's really happening, not the actual, the truth. So to work with the brain, of course, and be able to draw upon that, I think you have to, well, we know that you have to pretty much set up a systematic process to provoke the brain to draw out information that you require. So a lot of the work that we do is to take apart our individual thinking patterns inside an organization and put them together in more of a shared way, so that we order all of our bits of information from our individual brain trusts and we bring them forth in an organized manner. That way we kind of take into account a lot of things such as feelings, because quite frankly we do kind of wrap a lot of what we, our belief sets around with feelings, and so we have to take that in account too. So most of this is really just trying to set it up so that we can kind of, dose out what we all have and we're holding in our memories and bring it forth. So if you're collecting a lot of information, which we're try to do that when we're gathering for innovation or creativity, that we really try to put it into an order that will be easy, non-confrontational. There really isn't an individual ownership to it, but more of a collective approach, and we call that the collaborative side.
I apologize for interrupting, but you used a phrase a few moments ago that really struck a chord with me. I want to hear more about it. You actually used the term innovation on demand. Can an organization, can an individual actually create or innovate on demand? Because I think many of us have the perception that it's almost a happy accident when creativity or innovation happens. Can you say more about that?
Right, right. Or it all comes from strange Fred over in the corner somewhere.
Right.
Exactly. The innovation on demand is really totally dependent upon having a systematic structure in place, and that is that there has to be a systematic process by which you are either going to group by one or group by three or four and proceed to bring forth the information, bring forth issues. We look at information. We look at caution. We look at benefits. We look at alternatives or possibilities. And we even, as I say, look at feelings to try to bring forth the information in a comfortable, safe way. So that means, that's what I mean by on demand, that you have a process or a framework for approaching any kind of an issue, a problem, a subject, an opportunity in a very organized way so that it doesn't get lost or distracted by things such as ownership, ego, and other ways. That's usually what ends up distracting conversations and people, and or they don't stay with the order of discussion, and they then start talking over each other, and they stop listening, and they keep planning on what they want to say next. And so that usually gets in the way of any kind of a discussion, let alone when you're really trying to innovate or address alternative possibilities or change.
So how is what you're describing, if it is, different than, like, brainstorming?
Well, of course, personally, I'll just tell you that I consider storm to be the operative word. and here it's a matter of that you are really kind of going in a somewhat disorganized way. In other words, you're totally dependent in brainstorming upon what's going to come to mind. In other words, you're going right back to your normal patterns that have been instilled into your brain and your mind over the years. So you have a regular pattern that's replicatable by which you draw ideas. You end up often with your favorite ideas, etc. In that sense, that when you throw out the ideas on the table, you certainly can get them, and you certainly have been kind of brewing ideas for a lot of years. But the number of ideas ends up being rather limited, and it doesn't necessarily relate to where you want to go. And I think about thinking is really about like sailing a boat. You've got to know the point of departure and the point that you want to arrive. Now, you get to tack all over the water or the lake or the ocean, but in reality, you really do have a plan of where you're going, and there's a relationship to what you're thinking about to the objective. In our case, we use a process, in a sense, an association, use a term called random word, but what it does is that word really gets, in an organized way, it helps the mind be provoked into a certain place to which it begins to think about, and in fact, all the minds sitting around the table begin to think in a shared time about this common picture, as opposed to thinking about any picture they want to think about. So the brainstorm is going out into a storm of thought. Random word is much more organized, you might want to say contrived, but it is there, and usually, in my experience, yields 2 to 3 to 4 times the number of ideas that you will get out of brainstorm.
Can you,
and relevant ones.
Can you illustrate an example of a random word, like how it would actually play that? Maybe something you've done in the past, this exercise?
Yeah, well, you actually want this to be an honest provocation, so you really would like to pick it blind if you could. So oftentimes we'll just say go to a dictionary, a book, open it up, find the first noun. Let's say that first noun is the word teacup. I'm already picking a difficult one here, but teacup. But that this is part of the association. You then position teacup as being the provocateur to your brain. Now that really isn't what your issue. Let's say the issue on the table is how to make more room for parking in the parking lot, the company parking lot. That's the issue. So then we random word the word teacup, and then we begin to, all of us, think about at the same time, whoever's part of this group, would begin to think about what we know about a teacup. And we know a teacup has a handle and it holds liquid. It has a capacity. It may have, if you think about teacups, could end up having a saucer. Well, what you do is you begin to now take yourself away from, the provocation is to remove yourself away from the familiar with this unfamiliar picture of a teacup, Your brain now has been, in a sense, tricked to get away from its normal patterns and what it's going to come forth with. And it sits and it now serves you a little better in thinking about the aspects of a teacup. As silly as that is, but now each aspect of that teacup that you list, now you begin to bridge that over to the issue about parking. So capacity of a teacup, the shape of a teacup, those things can now have an application to how to increase the size of a parking lot, believe it or not, by pairing up those aspects, those most relevant aspects to your issue to the right, and then you begin to trigger within your brain what part of a teacup to the parking lot then opens up even broader thought around concepts and ideas and will help you get to a myriad of ideas and pictures around what could be done on the parking lot, believe it or not.
And then is this something that you can train somebody at the organization to do, or does it need
anyone,
to be?
Anyone can do this, and of course, if you're going to have innovation on demand, you're going to have to, everyone is going to have to kick into this somewhat systematic process, not just association or a teacup, but they all have to be prepared and learn sets of tools that they could use. So they then go into their sessions armed with some very, very appropriate, provocative, and mind-changing tools that will then get them focused to be far more productive and on demand. And when I say on demand, one of the unique aspects of this is as a team gets more proficient at these things, we put in the aspect of time. And we set up a certain amount of time. We may begin, if they're just learning some of the tools, we may start out with a 10-minute exercise to begin to practice. And this is just like any good tool. You got to practice with it to become good. But then we start moving on down from 10 minutes and get down to periods such as 4 minutes. And they will be just as productive and just as efficient in 4 minutes as they were in 8 and 10. Now, if you take those multiples, you would end up taking, we could take up to 50% out of the time of thinking and meetings that have been held.
And then, then you would move on to another random word after you've exhausted teacup?
No. The one random word may be enough to take you into this whole set of ideas that you begin. Then you can now change your focus a little bit and move from the random word, which was a stimulator. You now move over to this host of words and concepts and ideas, and you start working around the concepts and ideas that are really applicable to the parking situation.
What are some other tools that you would employ then? I think I remember, in fact, I know I remember because I was so enamored with what I saw. The six hats. Can you just give us a quick overview of what
the six hats? The six hats happens to use when you get to the area of possibilities. We do, instead of just stay with the narrow range of possibilities that our mind has set up in patterns, we try to then set up one or two or three. In this case, the random word is a single provocation. So that provocation is useful when we get to that perspective. In other words, the six hats is where we ask a group to begin into a shared situation. That is, we're all looking at one subject together, and we're going to go through an order of thinking about that issue together. We're not going to think about it when it's convenient to us and convenient to our own brain and our own mind. We're going to think about it in an order, systematically, that will now align us, and we start yielding up our thoughts, ideas, possibilities, the benefits. We have to touch upon the risks. We have to touch upon all of our individual feelings, and we do that in a particular order of the way it's set up. Now, we've all agreed to that order in the meeting. This isn't a process that's owned by any individual, which is another advantage of it in meetings. We have very often authority and rank and order take over and influence meetings. That's part of the groupthink aspect, if you've done any research on that, where everyone just wants to concur and agree rather than really raise the issues such as a caution or feelings, which might have changed the outcome or the thinking really dramatically. So we have to do that. Now, as a group, about I put it in a three-leg chair here, Stone and Lee, that the most important part of thinking is the first one is perception. Perception is where we make over 95% of our mistakes. It's because we have our patterns set up, because we have our belief sets. We very often err right from the get-go, and we're not thinking about the right issue or the real problem or the real opportunity. So perception tools are really important tools to have, and that's where we really are helping people shift from a world we live in most of the time, which is subjective, and get them over to a more objective world. That's really what the random word did, in a way. We got them out of a subjective position and got them into a very objective position because of the teacup came out of nowhere. It just came out of left field, and it didn't allow them to fall back on their regular pattern. So we start out by really getting the grounds in perception, making sure you know how to find the right thing to think about. Then we come in with the creativity tools, and the creativity tools are the ones that are generated by really seeking, it's a area called lateral thinking that Edward developed, and it's got a whole set of provocations unto its own, which are also tools.
I like that term, lateral thinking, as opposed
to
what,
thinking,
linear?
That's your alternatives. Lateral even performs a word if you want to look at it. Here we are in football season. The aspect is we're going to move ourselves out of our normal neural position, our normal comfortable ideas and habits and thoughts, and we are provoked into an area that's really unknown to us, and that means we've lateraled ourselves or our mind over to that area, and that then opens up a whole new series of opportunities for thinking. So that creativity now generates a whole bunch of ideas around that appropriate perception, and we maintain our objectivity through all of this. We don't fall back to our subjectivity. And then finally, when we've got this host of opportunities called ideas, we then begin to get together to do a collaboration on them. And that is, we begin to distill those ideas down to the most, maybe not so practical, but to the most applicable, maybe the most cost-worthy, the one that could be done the quickest. And all of that begins to harvest now what you've produced. In rather short period of time, but you get to harvest that back down and start to put that into what we call, you know, the part of innovation, which is implementing what you've put together.
Yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road, and you
this
know from our work.
Rubber, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And you've got to have a way of going about in a very holistic way of making sure you don't lose any good ideas. There's no such bad idea. You may want to put them in a parking lot for a little bit later, but right now, you want to get to that harvest, which says we've got to have something implementable that really will save us the money, save us the time, et cetera. And then after that, of course, we're very high on measuring for results.
And so, you're really pushing the envelope in this field, in that you're not only serving corporate clients, which makes perfect sense to me, and of course with our work at Desai, venturing those ideas for commercialization is a really important focus area for us. But I understand that you're also taking many of these creativity tools or these thinking tools to our legal system and working with jury deliberation. Can you say more about that?
Well, everybody has a personal grudge in their life. And mine was that I was, some years ago, I was a jury foreman. And this was on a trial, happened to be down in Georgia. And I remember going in as a businessman, and I couldn't quite understand how I got selected on the jury, let alone be selected jury foreman, or foreperson, they're called, or presiding juror. So I went through that experience in an afternoon, and I realized within myself and the way I wanted to see things come out, I was able to really push my influence with folks that were relatively passive. Now, we're passive because we're strange to each other. By very design, juries are selected by not knowing each other. They're picked by their driver's license number and or out of another type of pool. And so you're really put in there to kind of cope with each other while you're dealing with a subject that really is foreign to you. but sometimes can be very, very important and, frankly, quite stressful because this is not an ideal situation socially for a lot of people. But I came out of there. We got a verdict, but I really wasn't very proud of it on the way we did it. And this was before I had met Edward and gotten so enamored with his tools. So when I did begin that kind of work while I was still in the corporate sector and working within our company, I said to myself, you know, this is the kind of thing that we need to really offer to the citizens who are just being good enough to go out there and to donate time. I know that they can be subpoenaed, et cetera, for this, but to go ahead and donate time to judge another citizen or a situation about another citizen, and they're giving no benefit of any kind of organization of thinking or discussion or otherwise. Now, the last thing that, frankly, a judge would want us to do would be to teach a jury how to be creative.
They really wanted
to stay kind of in the confines of what is called the law. But what we've done is taking some elements out of the process that we use for the six hats. And I worked with a series of judges, state trial judges, over about the last 6-7 years, and we have kind of rewritten the program so that it really does relate to court and process and things. But we've turned out a video, a 20-minute video, which is a learning orientation that they could see on a website or they could look at when they're, instead of playing hearts or canasta or something, while they're waiting for jury pool. And then we have given each a pocket guide, and the jury, ideally, with those pioneering judges that we can find here and there, they're given the choice of whether they want to use this process or whether they'd like to go about it in the, quote, old-fashioned way, which means Katie bar the door, there are no rules, there are no in these discussions. And, I mean, you've had some extraordinary things, like in Kentucky, where the jury got so frustrated without any process otherwise, they ended up flipping the coin on a man's life.
Oh, man.
And he lost. And so they now actually in jury instructions around the country, many judges will mention that you're not allowed to go in
and flip a coin. That's against the rules.
I mean, really, seriously. I mean, you know. So
what about rock, paper, scissors?
Yeah, rock, see, that's another process there. I mean, they can do anything they want back there. They don't really have to answer to anybody. So I felt that this that we had a great transition between business learning and business efficiency, and that this could be learned so quickly, and give credit to the citizen who's capable of wanting to take advantage of time. They don't want to sit there for hours, so even the timing factor is used where they can set their own time frames, and they make their own rules. It for the first time, gives a job to the presiding foreman. There is no job for them. I mean, no one knows other than to fill out a piece of paper and knock on the door and let the bailiff know when they're ready or not ready. And so this really has been a passion of mine, and it isn't an easy sell because the judicial is so much based on protocol and on history and the way they run the court that we're finding a few good judges around the country who have tried it, and they like it.
And I'm sure the jurors like it because every juror, I've been involved in juries also, and you want to do as good a job as possible. The jurors take this very seriously. You know, once you're in that room, this is serious business. No one really wants to do this in kind of a haphazard way.
No. And I think that's the good intentions. And so I'm really trying to figure out a way to get the word out to jurors because it really is a message for jurors, not so much a message for judges,
right.
Although, quite frankly, I will tell you that we have learned in my experiences that judges recognize themselves to be biased and that we have taken this form of decision-making and we have made a version of it for the judges when they are doing bench trials. That means no jury is involved. And the judges are rather amazed about what was really influencing them or making them predisposed to a given attorney or predisposed to not liking a defendant or not liking subject matter. So every one of us, all of us, are predisposed to the way our mind is set up for its points of references and its patterns, and so we are all dealing with bias.
Is there a,
and we need something to break us free of it.
Do you have a website for this where it's like, are you getting ready to go on a jury, like kind of a jury 101, juror 101 website?
I've got a blog. I'm not one of these gifted electronic wizards, but I did learn about this thing called blog, and I have one's called Fair and Just Deliberations. It's written out like a Fair and Just Deliberations.org. And on that blog, and this is my, you know, my public service blog, I guess, there's a video link where you will see a 6-minute clip of me actually introducing this, and I'm going to be adding some more stuff to it. These blogs take a lot of time to stay on top of them, but it is there to be seen by anyone under fairandjustdeliberations.org, and if they'd like to certainly make contact with me, send in information, their experiences as a juror, they'd like to be kept in touch with, I'm happy to do that. So in my lifetime, I'm hoping that, I'm not sure it'll happen, but that we will start to make some headway with the judicial institution to give this opportunity to jurors.
And what if our listeners want to reach out and call you, sell you some long distance, something like that? What's the phone number they can reach you?
Oh, the phone number they can use, long distance. Let's see here. Well, they can call me at, I'm going to put the number up on the blog for them, but here's a number right now. It's 828-626-3222. But I'm going to have a VoIP number in place here, and I'll put that up on the blog eventually. So
okay, well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You are certainly innovative and creative and getting outside of the box and all of those little idioms that describe people that are producing better results in less time. I'm delighted that you were able to join us on the show and looking forward to you coming to town, hoping you'll play a real role in Innovation Week coming up in February. We need to talk more about that.
What you're doing is sounds great. And,
yeah.
You know, certainly I really appreciate your opportunity to talk with you and Lee today and, you know, kind of tell you my story, so to speak. And you can imagine I'm a little biased all about and excited about some of the things we do, but I think what you're doing is great. It's without question that this century is the century of around thinking innovation. I mean, you know, when we've shipped all of our jobs overseas, and gone through a lot of things that we're in the reckoning of now, we've got to get back to the strength here, and that has been innovation and you got to do it on demand. You can't do it when it's serendipitous. And so there are real ways to do it, and everybody can get involved. And I laud you for what you're introducing down in Atlanta.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I was just visiting with a colleague late last week, and they were kind of pushing back a little bit, talking about the economic climate. You know, how can you expect an organization to invest in innovation execution? And, you know, my response, and it's quite candid and quite genuine, I can't think of a better time than
it's
now.
It's the only way out.
It's
the only way for them.
Absolutely.
It's the only way you're going to create value is to create it, and that is going to be opportunities, jobs for people, decisions of whether you're going to downsize or upsize. It's way too easy just to shrink and to pull back, but the aspect of and to engage people, there's not a better way to keep people around and keep employees turned on is to let them have a way of determining what their future is about, and so therefore empower them and let them play a role here in the innovation.
Absolutely. Well, listen, before we let you go, Grant, there's a little tradition we have here at the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career and what they've learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Yeah. I could heap them on heap them there.
let me clarify. Can we get you to do that in a minute or two?
Yeah.
Or less. Okay.
Easy. The one I remember, I think I was in a board meeting one time, and it was this was an example of a group think, and this is where where we end up wanting to concur with each other in thought as opposed to raising anything that's challenging. And I recall the issue around the time was that there was a product quality issue that was the subject, and it was being raised, and quite a few people, including the chairman, were defensive about that, and they would have preferred, and did want to steer the discussion over to the issue of a sales issue or sales efficiency. In other words, it isn't our product that's at problem, it is the fact that sales just aren't doing that. And I recall that discussion that I, at that point, did not stand up at the aspect of caution, and I too concurred and let the discussion follow the way that everyone wanted it to go, kind of like in concurrence, like, you know, let's go and convince ourselves that it really isn't product that has to change, it's our sales attitude. And that was a big mistake, and that has haunted me for a long time, and that really, you know, verified to me that this is what we've got to work on. We've got to be far more comprehensive and balanced when we look at things before we take action and move on. But I have never forgotten that. You know, right after you feel like a good guy, like you're a member of the team, the problem is you really let the team down. And when you're not speaking up about the caution and the risk, if we do shift our emphasis from product to sales.
And so you really do have to let the process work and work the process.
Absolutely. And you've got people need to be genuine and authentic. And if your thoughts have no value, if they really are going to be more to kind of join or go along, we make huge mistakes for ourselves and our careers.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And thanks again for joining us on the show. Really looking forward to seeing you at Innovation Week, but maybe we'll get a chance to see each other before that as well.
Good day and a great holiday season.
We'll sure do.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Until next week, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.